consistently attract soulmate clients, begin showing up on brand, monetizing on your calling. Welcome all spiritual coaches, leaders, healers, light workers, and practitioners to a show that turns you on in your business and amplifies your magnetism. I'm host, catalyst, and spiritual business coach Roslyn Fung, and I'm here to journey with you into the juicy and help you discover where the real gaps are. Ignite your mindset and soul with strategies and systems as each episode takes you to the sweet spot that activates your soulgasmic business. Enjoy this light language activation as we begin to magnetize and monetize.
Good morning, loves. How are you? I hope that you're doing well as you're tuning in live and on the replay. I'm really excited. As you can see, I have my special guest, a very amazing friend with me today. And we are talking about the power of attachment styles and how that impacts you in your relationships. I might insert a little bit here about how it impacts you in your relationships in business, but I bet you I'll have a different episode about it. Because today Lynn is going to talk all about it in romantic, intimate, familial relationships. But so this is for you if you have ever been told you're too needy from your partner and all you're doing is trying to connect. This is for you when you and your partner are in conflict and you have this overall feeling of doom, like, oh my gosh, it's going to end. This is for you if you often feel like, how do you keep ending up in relationships that make you feel bad or you just don't feel loved? So tuning in. Now, if you find a lot of value in this episode, please do shout this out on Instagram. It's Bold Sexy Warrior. On Facebook, it's Roslyn Fung Coaching Bold Sexy Warrior. We love, as you're watching live and on the replay, feel free to, if you're watching on social media, type in the comments. It would be amazing to hear your ahas, your takeaways, your questions. We'll circle back around. So I'm going to introduce Lynn. I think what we'll do is, because she's here visiting me, as you can see, she's from Edmonton. Lynn is one of my longest time friends. We met when I started my psychological private practice as a provisional psychologist, which means I'm in the process of becoming registered. And I accidentally, because I didn't know, I thought I was applying for a non-for-profit agency. So anyways, I got that quote unquote job and I was like, oh, it's private practice. So this would have been like, oh my God, like 15 years ago? No longer. My God. Anyway, yeah, longer because your daughter is 13. So crazy. But Lynn and I, we were, I'll say, like, you were often there when I was there. And so we would chat. Her office was beside mine. And it was really great to case consult. And she's such an incredible psychologist. I was like, can you be my supervisor? But at that point in time, she didn't have her 5 years of registration as a psychologist yet. But honestly, even though Lynn was never my formal psychologist, supervisor, and so been a huge impact in my life and my career. She's been like, you have been, she's not your typical psychologist. So, and she's supported me in really like being intuitive, because I didn't know what that was. You guys, if you knew me for a long time, you've been following me, you knew I was very type A, very masculine in my energy, just like heady, 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 right? And a perfectionist and all this. And so when Lynn and I started to connect, you know, I was doing, like, I was learning more. And one time we had a psychic party. Anyway, I'm gonna rewind this. I'll leave you guys on a cliffhanger with that. Let me first introduce you to Lynn more formally, because you need to know how amazing this lady is. So Lynn Dr. Lynn Kostyuk, okay, she's a doctor, is a registered psychologist and award-winning leader for psychologists in business, offering 20 plus years of psychological and business expertise. And in her clinical practice, Lynn considers individual, couple, and family issues from a holistic viewpoint based on developmental psychological theories. Her non-judgmental approach creates safety within the therapeutic relationship, clients can embark upon a personal journey towards. Lynn is the owner of Aspirations Inc., counseling and training center, which my private practice tours with. It wasn't the same practice when we met. You went on mat. Her daughter is 13 years old now. And, you know, I went to go visit her. She had a grand opening in her aspirations, which is in a beautiful, holistic heritage home. All the beautiful, original lighting and everything is still there. Oh, my goodness. And so it was just like, I remember, like, my office was literally having Can you share a little bit about your journey and how you got to be who you are? So passionate.
Yeah, well, so long. I think when I was in another practice, inside body. So we took it off, and in that we gave birth. And I always talk about, like, I feel like I've got twins because it really was birthing my daughter and business at the same time. And it's actually a good way for me to keep track. So how old is your business? Well, I just need to remember how old my daughter is, and it's kind of around the same age. So so I would say, like, in psychology, I think that, you know, I come from a family that actually was a broken home at the age when I was 10 years old. And so I do think that there's a lot of pattern attachment. And I always come back to the developmental sort of aspects of relationship, because when something happens to us that actually takes away from that sense of, you know, just unawareness, like, you know, they say ignorance is bliss. In some ways, when you're a child, you're just in that childlike state and you're in play and curiosity and exploration. But when something happens that actually takes that away from us, then we actually are left with these sort of unfinished pieces of emotional and relational development, which, you know, in the business, we call attachment wounds. And of course, when I was a child, I didn't know that was what that meant. But growing forward, I went into I don't know history, but I was really more in security and law enforcement sort of area first.
I knew that. You totally
that. Yeah, when I went to go study psychology, actually, I was going to go into forensics. But it was actually in my first year of my undergrad, I think going into our second year, you're asked to declare a major, and I had gone to school. It's always where I sort of feel so guided to make sure that I'm going in the right direction, because I, this whole time I had in my head, we're always super reliable if it's not connected to the rest of our whole around wanting to be in this place where I can support youth and support them to actually be a holistic being. But when I kind of got in and started seeing what the systems were like if you looked at law versus you know, the study of psychology, law is kind of, I still love stories. So I think the other thing is I have a really great memory for story. I think it helps me really kind of tune into other people and be real empathic and compassionate around their journey. I think the other piece is when I started learning about these two different areas, I sort of thought I could be actually in this story. But what happens is in law, you are carving a story, like you're creating, and there's creation to that. and you still get to have a big voice for your clients. But the story really has some, you know, degrees away from possibly the truth. Mm-hmm. And that sort of felt like it wasn't resonating with me. So I actually kind of ended up going into the world of psychology because I sort of felt like I really want to be able to hear those stories and shape those stories to be more molded to their truth. And I think that's still today my number one hold of purpose is mm-hmm. to help people transform into their wholeness and into their truth. And because I come from a background of having some detached connections, there's been mm-hmm. lots of growth in development psychology, which has kind of been my underlying sort of foundation, all of the work that I do and the way, the lens, I guess, I see the world and people. And so I think when I work with people, the idea of power of attachment is helping them to kind of recognize maybe where along the way, even if they're not consciously aware of it as an adult, maybe where some of those stumbles happened, where maybe some of that those attachment wounds happened in their kind of life, and maybe we can start finding a way to come back to a more sort of secure, grounded place within ourselves, which kind of over time, you know, every time we mend and integrate mm-hmm. a little piece, we end up becoming more and more whole. So it's not like a magic wand. It doesn't, you know, fix things. People all have to do their own work and then their own pace. And there's a big honoring process in that, in the work that I do.
Absolutely. And you bring in so much of your intuition. Like that's mm-hmm. the most powerful piece. I remember like the impact. So I went into the story about like how Lynn had a psychic party. This was when I was just on the tail end.
And that was for fun.
It wasn't like a professional thing. It was a girls' night. But we also know there's lots of amazing spirit guides. At this point, I was not awoke, you guys. I was not woken. And I remember I was at the tail end of my mat leave with my now 10-year-old son, Everett. And I had taken pretty much a whole year off. I was coming back. So I was like, oh yeah, let's, like, I was scared of psychics at this point, you guys. Like, can you imagine? Can you believe that? That was how much I've changed.
If you know Roz recently, this would be very hard to believe, but she was terrified to go down to actually have her turn with the medium.
I was crying. I was so scared because at this point, everybody's like, oh yeah, one time I did that, one friend, and these were a coincidence, like not hanging out with people that I now we're all like intuitives and psychics and that, but like at the point, she's like, oh yeah, one time I did this guy and we came home and the ghost made rice for us. I'm like, what? And she's talking about this, no, Bill, I'm freaking out, I'm crying, like having an over body response. Long story short, if you guys haven't, I don't remember if I've even shared it on a podcast, but I know I've shared it on Facebook Lives about my story. So today's not the day. You're just going to have to stay tuned or we'll figure out where that podcast is. But let's move into, like, you've just been such a huge part in just opening my intuition mm-hmm. that it has created the best in even my work as a psychologist too. I've had clients come and they're like thinking, okay, just diagnose a psychologist, but like they were hoping I would be like telling them they're crazy and mentally, you know, not stable. And it was, and because of my conversations and me developing my intuition more with Lynn, the influence is just like, have you thought about that? Like, you are an intuitive, this is like what's going on. And that just shifted everything for my clients. So I just need you to know like how huge that ripple effect is. It's mm-hmm. so huge.
Now, you know. Totally embrace it.
So beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so today we really want to talk about the different kinds of attachment styles. You could even explore what that is first. And then how that impacts positively and not so positively in our romantic relationships or even have friendships.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, there's a whole lot to attachment theory.
Yes.
So I'm probably not going to be able to get into all the nitty-gritties.
Of course not.
Something that's important is if you really just think about like two distinctions, right? So even if you think on an emotional level, you know how like, if you took an emotional bandwidth, you could take an emotion and there could be so many different terminologies that we would use in between. But overall, there's like a side where we're moving to feeling so not so pleasant and we're feeling more discomfort and disease you know, there's that kind of side mm-hmm. when we're moving there. And I think the same thing with when we're feeling emotionally comfortable and at ease and at peace and contentment. So there's like that side. And so if you think about that, if we're looking at comfort or discomfort or, you know, ease or dis-ease, you know, there's all this spectrum in between. So there's, this isn't, you know, categorical, I would mm-hmm. like to say. And I do want to say that as psychologists, we do actually diagnose, but as a counseling psychologist, which is where I've been formally trained, we're more working on the self and the mind, body, kind of spirit connections in various different ways. And so although we can diagnose, we tend to try to use the diagnostic criteria to sort of guide us in how we will support treatment. Versus more a clinical psychologist sort of approach, which might go into, you know, quite a range of diagnostic sort of pieces so that then they use that diagnosis to then treat. So we kind
Thanks
of,
for that discussion.
We kind of mm-hmm. use it to, you know, to guide us for sure. So it's not part of our work, but that's not the way that we like to sort of approach the mm-hmm. work with clients. So with attachment, you know, I'm going to sort of put this on a spectrum of like secure and insecure. So some of you might be familiar with those terms. Those are very well researched and well-known attachment terms. And there's lots of different categories, you know, on the insecure side and really on the secure side, you know, even though there's a range of level of security, the idea is getting to that sense of ease and comfort and, you know, sense of contentment and peace. And that's the secure side. And then, you know, you have this other swing, you know, and again, variations and degrees of that. And we're feeling insecure, which is where we're kind of increasing our level of discomfort and mm-hmm. dis-ease. And when we get into those sorts of places, of course, we would say that we're not emotionally stable in those moments. And of course, the more we go into that, the more less stable we might feel ourselves and in our embodiment of ourselves. But actually, when it is connected to relationships, there is this sense of it's called an activation system. So what's what happens is our attachment system gets activated. And when our attachment system gets activated in this insecure realm of places, that's mm-hmm. kind of where it connects to our fear. And depending on the patterns and the degrees of what kind of wounding experienced in relationship in our life, you know, these were from very mild and something that we can breathe through and get very easily, and some that can just resonate and still really stay with us and feel like they're hurting us the same degree as they might have at some other earlier stage in our end point of our development.
When do you usually, like, what sort of things do you see when couples come in? And or, like, do you want to speak as well to parents and child?
Sure. That's where it all starts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we learn our styles definitely from the environment we've come in. So if you almost think about that as, like, your starting point, right? So that's, you know, you could have, like I said, like, in my history, I mean, I have a really wonderful, you know, very early years of development. And it was really when I was 10 where my parents, mm. you know, separated, that some of these things kind of started to affect. And between the years of 10 and 13, I think, mm-hmm. were probably the tougher years of feeling in those connections again, or even trusting them. And I guess that's it. It's like, kids don't often think, you know, the way adults think. So we feel, and we're very much more sensate based as a child. So that sense of felt security is a different sense of going, in your brain, I know I'm safe here. Mm. And there's a difference there. So I would say that for parent-child relationship, when there's a disconnect, right, that those things sometimes get even interwoven into our personalities, how we share, how open, because it's not just whether I trust that person, because most of us will try to do what fear tells us to do, which is to avoid or to get away or escape or something like that. And so we can do that. Mm-hmm. But what happens is that we find that somewhere along the way, we end up being in a pattern that feels or acts like very similarly, because we really haven't avoided it because it's in us. So we have to look at that element in us that actually kind of keeps moving us into this dis-ease, this insecurity, this place of discomfort when we're in connection. And because if that has happened when we're younger and we don't even have, like when I was 10, I had this ability to think, because developmentally we kind of start, our brain is really kind of coming on board with a lot more bigger perspectives and ideas. So I had both of those elements. But if we're looking at someone who's younger, they might not even understand those, because it's a felt sense of security that all of a sudden might just show up in relationship. And I don't know if any of you have ever sort of experienced where you're just in a relationship with someone and all of a sudden your whole system starts to kind of explode internally, and there's really no sign or signal as to why that's happening. And you're kind of like left kind of wondering what happened. And as an adult, when that happens to us and there's not a connection to what that was like when we were younger, because we didn't have that developmental piece in our cognitive sort of field to support us, you know, we just start making meaning of it. And often those meanings are very erroneous and they're not connected, you know, so we'll make it about us, like, oh, we'll make judgments about ourselves, or we'll think that, oh, that person. And so then we kind of get rid of that or try to fix something in a relationship that might not actually be good for us, you know.
Can you give an example?
Yeah. Okay. Like, say if somebody has, you know, walks in a room and, you know, they're in a kind of okay place, and then somebody's standing there, but maybe they have a kind of a loud voice, right? And maybe the person has a voice that has a memory, that voice reminds them of something. Maybe their parents were in conflict. Maybe they witnessed conflict when they were really young, but maybe their parents separated when they were five. Right. So they don't actually then had a lot of conflicts. Maybe parents moved into a better place and then, you know, the child didn't experience that. Mm-hmm. But say all of a sudden this person, you know, kind of has this booming voice and they're in a public place. And all
do they know each other, these two people?
No, no. Okay. It doesn't even have to be. Right. Mm-hmm. But it could. Right. Okay. Say maybe you're getting introduced to somebody and all of a sudden it's like, or maybe going on a blind date. You know, maybe you met someone on Tinder and just decided to show up. But then this person has a mannerism or something. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, for no reason, this activation happens and you're thinking, what's going on? So then you make it about you, and there is an element that's about you, but you might even say, oh, that guy's creepy, or hey, that whatever, but we might not really understand what that experience was because we haven't looked at that part, because it might've been kind of before our like precognitive, like before our cognition was really there to really help us identify those things. But our brain is still working now as an adult.
Yeah.
So it's trying to make sense, and our brain does like to. It likes to make sense of things. So it'll work really hard to try to make sense of whatever the experience is. It's just kind of linking all of the things connected to the activation. In relationships, these can happen. We call that more attachment than activation, because biologically we want to feel safe. But if we've had experiences that have actually made us not secure, it doesn't matter how much our brain is telling us that we're secure in that security in the world. And if we're not paying attention to how to care for that, shift that into a more secure place, then we get stuck in these patterns in our friendships, in our
Okay, thank you. Can you share maybe the main types of attachment styles, or are there more than that?
Well, I would say that the main types, like I said, are secure.
Okay.
And then on the insecure side, there's kind of more like the anxious type and like an avoidant, and you can have a combination of anxious and avoidant. So like I said, like there's like different sort of levels of how we sort of connect in the anxious side, which kind of create the sense of insecurity. But then there's there, but I would still say there's degrees of security. And one of the things I like to work with my clients on is actually how to earn secure. So say you were in a situation where you maybe weren't feeling very secure. There is ways for you to work on yourself so that you can actually kind of get to a place of more security. And I like to call that earned, and I believe that's in the literature as well, but I think it's like we earn it because we go through process, and we actually reground ourselves using our, you know, the strength of our mind as an adult, but and also all of our sort of body sensations. And it's almost like we need to retrain the connections to that, so that we're not just having an attachment system that's just when really it's out of context of what is pulled for that situation.
Okay, I think we can go into a little bit more detail after commercial, these attachment, how, like, when they're not in the healthy your attachment, how that might show up and play out, and then what can do within our inner work, and how, well, specifically what Lynn does for clients, so that you can ways with, hey, like, that's me, you're identifying with, have one. You know, for me, I'll tell you mine when we get back. What, or maybe Lynn can tell me. I'll tell you my, like, thing I get most triggered about. So to Lynn.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Om Times TV. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
Are you feeling maxed out working one-on-one with clients and you're deeply desiring to scale your business for more time freedom without sacrificing your income, but rather expanding it? Many of my clients who are light workers, healers, practitioners, and even coaches, they're often multi-modality, are coming to me because they are sick and tired of working with clients on a one-off session model where the clients are coming in on a as-need basis. Or if they're selling packages, they are selling them in the sense of buy five, get one free, or the greater the number of sessions, the greater the discount. The problem with this is it's still a dollar for hours business model. And so that leaves the practitioner feeling really exhausted and overwhelmed from having to put so much time, effort, and energy in finding new clients that they're not operating in their most elevated self with their current clients. And so if this is you, I would love to share with you that it's time to elevate your business and scale it to sell high ticket one-on-one programs or even group programs. This will allow you to have more deeper impacts because you're raising your clients' results, you're scaling your business, and you're having that time freedom you deeply are yearning for. If this is resonating with you, love, I'd love to invite you to come on a soul business alignment call with me so that you can stop feeling like you're on this roller coaster ride and start to feel safe and stable and even having fun in your business and your finances. Please go to electrifymybusiness.com to apply and we'll hop on a call. I can't wait to connect.
If I could be you, you could be me for just 1 hour. If we could find a way to get inside each other's minds. Walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. Well, before you abuse, criticize, and accuse. Walk a mile in my shoes.
Hey. Oh, welcome back. So Lynn, talk a little bit more in details and just details about each of the attacks and when it's not health secure, on how that comes in. Also, volunteer to have some therapy right now. Goodness, what's happening? Okay, sorry guys, here is a little bit spot, so we're gonna do our best to come on, spirit guides, support us in all the tech to get our messages across. Okay, let's talk about else. Okay,
well, like there's like on the secure side, we have the anxious style, we have the avoidant style, and then we have the a mix, so like a combination mm-hmm. of anxious and avoidant. And I would say like the relationships that kind of can most when we have an avoidant connected to an anxious, and those are kind of like a bit of the extremes, and I'll where the most damage I mean to our sense of self-esteem and our sense of feeling able to feel secure in ourselves. So have had a few of these relationships, and you keep attracting into relationships, actually make it harder and harder for you to really believe, right, that you could ever get out of those relationships, because the more we're practicing or in something, actually, really, there is actually a stylistic kind of connection happening that actually interferes with your ability to just safe and feeling secure in relationship. So the anxious avoidant is more like if there's anxious, there's a sense of when something starts to connect, that's when the activation system sort of connects in, right? So mm-hmm. and it's the style manners are insecure, like I guess it's a security. So for an anxious person, they will feel very, very highly anxious. They will do a lot of things to try to reconnect, because for that, yeah. Roz is just
I can feel quite identified. I mean, I'm aware of that, so I obviously don't have that.
Yeah.
Who knows? I probably do at some point, like sometimes, right? I'm human. I can recognize myself in that one.
And that's
sure.
Yeah. So then tell me, how do you sort of, when you were in that sort of style, yeah. you think, and not in this very evolved sort of
place. Yes, like, let's pull up Low Rod right now.
What would she have done to try to connect if there was?
So I'm thinking about like relationships before I met my amazing husband. Was like, I got into conflict with her. It was kind of like I pushed them away, but like secretly I really wanted them to, you know, like come and like pursue. So, and then I would also, and then when they didn't, I was super anxious. I was also, cause pursuers are often a very common pattern. I was definitely the pursuer, and my parents were often the avoiders, and distance themselves and then just totally avoid. And then feel really, really anxious. This thing just makes me feel really anxious. Mm. So
when someone just drops the connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you never hear from you guys relate. like ghosting is a thing. I'm just like, how can people like, and you know, it feels really disrespectful. I mean, I understand why people ghost, but it's so respectful.
Yeah.
So for me, I would say that's the toughest piece, is when it's just like there's no communication back. It's just so, like there's stone walls. It's like just grow up and talk.
Yeah, and like a true anxious
right,
style.
Yeah. That's what this looks like.
That's what that looks like. It's pretty common for us to all feel a little bit of anxiousness when there's a disconnect. But I think that style that you just described is, yeah, there's like a neediness. Like there's, it becomes like almost like a sense of desperation to make the connection. And sometimes the way an anxious style person, that like an anxious style will go, and I'm not going to say this because there's various different ways people will style holistically sort of do this, but they'll go about it in some ways that can feel and not very. So it's not just that you know, they're needy, but then sometimes they can actually go ahead and other sorts of behaviors, like going around and talking to other people, you know, getting other people involved. Like, they have other things that they can do to try to actually that need is met. But most things actually, when it comes to the person that they're trying to get the attention from, it doesn't really work for them to feel any more connected. Because if you were, let's say, on the avoidance side, so Roz's description of like the person, you know, pushing the person away and getting further away, that's kind of more what we would see. So is actually very overwhelmed. So they get very overwhelmed, and because it gets too big, they often will have a style we don't really want to commit. You know, can look like stonewalling, can feel like, you know, they're just abrupt and shut down, or they're not able to you. And in essence, that is their protective mechanism. So about that, because I think the brain as a person tries to make sense of things. Like, she's like, you just grow up and communicate. Like, my brain's trying to say to you, like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, if you just communicate with me, this will all be good. But I think the piece that gets mostly missed, especially in relationships where we're trying to secure a kind of sense of identity, is that these styles are really reflective when that activation is coming up. So when we're not activated, those styles aren't showing up. So we're able to kind of be charming and be connected and say like really beautiful things. And so you can, oh yeah, like, you're really valuable. And, you know, and so we kind of stay connected. But when all of a sudden there's something that feels threatening, thing, this is an anxious sort of sense of security that we approach others in the world, and even maybe the world in general, if you really had some breaches of trust as a young person, then all of a sudden it's like, you know, this sense of security system comes up, and it kind of shifts
hostage.
Into these,
holds a person hostage.
Into these kind of stylistic sort of ways of behaving, you know, moves everybody more into the less secure realm and away from the more secure realm. And I just want to say that protection. So I think part of the healing of the relationship and these systems are activating in with you is to, you know, is to recognize that you're in your, the other person is in their system too, and it's a protective mechanism, and it doesn't feel good, and it doesn't feel, however, at the base level, the healing, everybody is protecting everyone. Like, we're all vulnerable, we're all scared. Being that level of true love and intention, because we've been hurt and wounded, and that wounded part that's there, right? We can't go there. And that just looks different. And then, fortunately for those anxious avoidant patterns that are together as a relationship, they do the most as their protective mechanisms, actually working complete, you know, opposite each other. It's anxious, really needs a reassurance, like, hey, for me, like, I'm just make that communication and all good. But is, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed, I can't manage any of that. I can't even give you a tiny little reassurance that you think you need to make it all better. So that sort of feels like, you know, I've lost this, and that makes me feel even more insecure. But really, they're both actually very, they're hurting, and both have the wounds that they're protecting themselves with. One just looks the polar opposite of the other. And because if avoidant, you know, I will say that avoidant styles, although they're not impossible to change, avoidant styles a lot of nurturing enoughness to get into a place, being able to change. And the person who has that dial really has to be willing to really open and look up, because it's so scary for them. The tiniest bit of opening, you know, is fear. And so, you know, is met with this fear reaction. And so they have to really be willing to work with themselves. But it is, you know, there's a process there, because they, you know.
Yeah. And would you say that's the most common relationship dynamic you see? Because I remember when I was marriage and family therapist, that was the most common one I saw.
I would say, like, probably in therapy, we probably see those dynamics a little bit more, where activations are set up. But I would say we also see the ones, like, where maybe you have a secure partner, mm-hmm. and you then have somebody either in an avoidant or in an anxious place, yeah. and it then can sway the secure partner too. But that's both ways. The secure partner can actually kind of create a space where the person who had less security starts to heal to that secure place. That's probably like the ultimate sort of actually earning sense of security, to be connected to secure attachment. Thing is, perpetually in relationships, I'd say, like, you're an anxious attachment, you've been perpetually in a relationship with an avoidant attachment, your sense of desperation and neediness has maybe become a self-definition of yourself rather than a recognition of an attachment style. And so the thing that has to happen is that we need to find a way not to be actually available for us, because avoidant people are not immediately available for us, but a secure attachment might be. But we get,
how do we tell, Lynn? We got to get past the honeymoon stage. I mean, you got to get to the stage of, like,
yes.
Now I can kind of, I'm like, oh.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, I see it happening. Like, maybe we'll say red flag. But what would you say starts, like, that would be the point where we start to have those conversations, and then we start to see the pattern, right?
Yeah. So avoidant styles will not be in relationships for very long, because if they're avoidant, then they're they're avoiding commitment. And so people that connect in with avoidant styles, you know, they're not going to stay in commitment, or they're going to find somebody who actually is also avoidant, and then they can stay in commitment longer because they're both kind of avoiding. And so the detachment actually helps them to stay connected and kind of be in a safe kind of connection. Mm-hmm. But I would say that, you know, if you're out there and you're an anxiously attached person, you know, it'll be harder probably to find a secure attachment, because the people that are probably in all those Tinder sites, they're probably, you know, more avoidant, because they probably don't stay in relationships for that long, you know, 6 months, a year. When we start getting into the places of actually wanting to relationship, you know, those of will check out, right? Because that'll be too much for them to stay in connection.
This is juicy, guys. Like, I think we need to skip our meditation and just keep. Usually we have meditation like the last 10 minutes. Yeah. Do you want to do that? I feel like this is really juicy. I mean, the meditation's good. It does come back to, at the end of the day, it's like you being secure. I mean, I've been in friendships, I've been in relationships where, as I evolve, you know, I'm becoming more and more secure within myself, because that is key. It's like, you guys always hear me say, your relationship with yourself is the key, is the most important, your foundation. And so when we are secure, we have the ability to hold space for what's possible and have our partner, if they're in anxious or avoidance attachment, to have a really way to be in relationship, you know. And I'll say personally, I've been in relationships or even friendships where that's shifted the way they showed up, because I'm so secure and I'm, you know, like, low Roz is like taking it personally. It's like high self Roz is like, no, this is okay. This is their attachment style. And, you know, all I can do is just say, okay, well, I'm here for you when you're ready to talk. But at some point, you know, from personal experience for me at least, it was like, you know, at what point after you have these talks, you come up with strategies, and it's like, here's how we can reconnect, here's what we'll stay connected. You know, when you do these behaviors, this is how my experience of it, and it's not okay because these are my boundaries. Mm-hmm. this is what I need in order for this relationship to balance and a give and take. And like for me, happening, like that's.
And no. That would be a reaction. So let's say a secure person, like I shouldn't say a secure person, a secure style.
Yeah.
Because I think the other thing is we all feel we at some point. So that's mm-hmm. unrealistic. You're not going to feel
secure
at some point. But I think, you know, we can also see where someone comes in and they're very competent. They're very achieved. They've achieved so much. And they have such confidence in the real world. And then as soon as they get in a relationship, it's like their whole sense of self deteriorates. And so the thing is attachment is really on how we connect with ourself with yeah. another person. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that we can kind of keep those kind of barriers up. But we're in those softer places in our heart, the most vulnerable places, that those systems will then sort of activate. Mm-hmm. If the healing hasn't happened for us, that same level of intelligence, confidence, and wisdom that we bring into the rest of the world at other times, into our sense of self, when we're in connection with relationship and know that we can make it through, that we can survive it. We think we'll be more than survive it. We can actually feel secure and calm and at peace with it. And I think when is the time if this keeps repeating? And I think that's the thing is with someone is very unavailable, very and they get their commitment scares them and closeness scares them and enrichment scares them. Then when you have someone who's enriching and caring, it's going to get them to be pulling away.
Yeah.
And we have to decide, are we actually going to be the one that the healer force for them? Because there's also the other aspect of it
where
where they can create a sense of insecurity and make it to be an unhealing force for us. It can be an unraveling, really. And we see that happen too.
For the secure?
Yeah. So you can have a secure child, be in connection with somebody who's avoidant or anxious, and all of a sudden be moving into different sort of because of the level of, you know, secure attachment that you're trying to cultivate with someone, because the rules of engagement change. And so because they're not matching up, then the insecurities begin to start coming in for someone who's even feeling secure.
And so when you unravel, do you go back to what your origin?
Most likely.
Yeah. That was,
okay.
Yeah. That most makes likely. Sense.
But you could even be secure and have never had an origin of insecurity in your family relationship and then be in a relationship, say with an avoidant person, and all of a sudden start acting and be like an insecure, attached, you know, anxious kind of person. So I think the piece is that if this attachment system is coming up and up and up in real life, it's going on for you and how that's happening in relationship. Because often people that are feeling anxious in relationships and are making realizations and excuses, if they're connected to someone who's avoidant, that person really might not be available. They're often claimed as being needy or clingy. And so it starts on something that gets defined because the person is saying this to us. In reality, there is a reasonable request to actually be loved and to have your hand held and to be feeling special and precious in relationship because that is actually what secure love like, is that we give each other what we need. It doesn't mean like we're overly needing it. It just means that because it's there, we're actually okay. Yes. And we know we're okay. And that's the feeling we have when we start feeling those moments of attachment with someone, is that someone responds to our need and we're like, huh, that's lovely. That's nice. Mm-hmm. You know, and we accept that. We accept that it's real. Yeah. Rather than going back into a fear place, like, oh my God, is that going to go away? Real.
Yeah,
but if we can accept it and let, then we know.
This is why with Dr. Lynn Kostyuk, you know, this it's really powerful to have a third party, a professional, right, a therapist to be on the outside and explain this. I see Shelley here. Thank you, love. She's like, this is so juicy. This is so interesting. It is. Like, I was really excited about hosting Kostyuk because she's. Like, it's a real different perspective when you can hear it differently. Like, even for myself, right, just with seeing my own attachment style wounding in relationship with other kinds of attachment style that can unravel as well. Mm-hmm. Like that's happened, we'll say for me, right? But it's like, it's almost like so freeing to hear, okay, you know, you don't have to personalize so much. It's like, this mm-hmm. is their shit. And this is your shit. And how do you not let that collide mm-hmm. is by going back into your mm-hmm. own security and knowing what's, you know, my relationship with me, boundaries, mm-hmm. which we could talk a whole lot about. Like, yeah. And not today.
And but. I haven't even got into the place of like where kind yeah. of like the real interesting pieces in development are, is that if we go into having children, let's say,
yeah.
that actually in the development mm. of our children, we are going to face any of these attachment yep. wounds that come back up in for ourselves.
Yes.
In our familial relationships that maybe we thought we had healed through and gone through, but there will be, you know, levels or I guess like, you know, kind of subtleties that sort of show up and it can start building. And again, it'll feel like there's no connection. There really is a connection. Mm-hmm. I do believe our children continue to give us opportunities
Absolutely.
To heal and grow. And so do our relationships. And, you know, mm-hmm. I would say when relationships are not giving us the opportunity to heal and grow, you know, which means that if we're doing growing and there's a stagnancy in like the other partner, then that's not a healing and growing relationship. So I'm not just saying bail right away, because we all do kind of tricky part is we all grow at our own paces. But I would say like you have to choose your own time limit. You have mm-hmm. to choose your own sort of time limit to say, you know, does this still feel okay for me to give space or hold space for the possibility? And at some mm-hmm. point there that might still feel like a yes in your heart. And at some point this will start feeling like, I don't think so. Mm. Like I feel like this person hasn't grown a nudge, or, you know, this person continues to promise, mm-hmm. but then doesn't deliver. Mm-hmm. And if this is happening over periods of time and it's deteriorating you, then somewhere along the way, you doesn't mean you even have to leave the relationship. You do have to give yourself the ability to grow, even despite your partner's ability not to, like, you know, decision not to grow.
Yes.
Because we can't control other people's growth.
Absolutely.
And what they can handle.
Absolutely. So we have about a minute left.
Okay.
And I know as people are like listening or wrapping up. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Lynn Kostrak practices out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. If you do live in the province of Alberta, you can see her as your mm-hmm. therapist. How can people connect with you? I know she's got a Stay Tuned, follow her, Aspirations Inc. On Instagram. It's Aspirations_Inc. I mean, it's all in the show notes, so you guys can go check that out.
Yeah.
A safe place to grow.ca is the website.
Yeah.
And you guys can book an appointment to see Dr. Lynn if you're in Alberta.
Yeah, we have
for therapy.
Way to get a hold of me is I am fairly busy, but the best way to get hold of me is we have an online referral form on our website.
Awesome.
And that's the first step. And then because we're doing virtual still quite a bit, but I offer virtual as well, and in person is available. And so just you can fill out the forms. Once you're registered, it'll kind of come to me, and then I will get a hold of you to set up an appointment.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Lynn.
Yeah,
this was
welcome.
So good. I know we could jam on for more. Thank you so much. Do follow Dr. Lynn, connect with her, and shout this episode out. Tag a friend if you feel like this would benefit them, or, you know, send it to them privately.
Hopefully it was helpful and useful.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.